Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We have a guest on the telephone because everybody's on the telephone these days. It's getting kind of depressing not having people in the studio. Our guest today is Cochise County Sheriff Mark Danels. Sheriff, can you hear me?
Hello, Sherry. Good morning. Good morning, everybody listening.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was wondering what was going on down there with the virus that's floating around. Are you guys staying healthy?
We are. You know, when this kicked here, 6 weeks ago now, I think it's been, when this started really ramping up, this is one thing we look at this is something that if you have a crisis in Tucson or you have a crisis in Phoenix or anywhere in the country, usually you can call upon your neighbor law enforcement to give you a hand. In this case, we're all in this. We got to take care of our own problems right now. So we put some serious precautions, and I just heard the news where that juvenile center in Virginia, where they had like 15 kids that have been infected. Well, we went ahead and we made sure we had our precautionary measures in place. It's never foolproof, but it's something to protect our inmates, something to protect our juveniles. And to date, we have had no one be infected within our inmate facilities. To include, we took one of our jails. We have three jails in Cochise County. We took one of our jails and transition that into a hospital. So anybody that shows any signs or symptoms, they go there until they're quarantined or released by medical staff. So far, it's worked out really well. And on the deputy side, same thing. We've had no deputies. I'm knocking on my head as wood right now that we don't have any deputies either that become infected. Because, I mean, we run minimum staff like most law enforcement agencies in this country. And, man, have an epidemic in a rural part of your country, it's a bad thing for public safety.
Yeah, you're kind of way out there as far as, you know, medical services. I know people sometimes, if it's really traumatic, they get flown or, you know, transported up to Tucson. How are the hospitals doing? Are they dealing with it, or do you have that many cases down there?
We have 20 cases in Cochise County, and we got others that are waiting back testing. Not a lot of testing in the rural parts. You look at what happened in New York, LA, and these other places where, I mean, it seems to be a plethora of testing. That's not so much in the rural part. So a lot of times if you have the signs, symptoms, I know an officer that had it, they sent him home, didn't even test him, and he had all the signs and symptoms. So our hospitals are doing well. They're hanging in there. I mean, same thing that we're all dealing with is I don't think anybody was really prepared. I don't care what they say. We didn't have I look back on us even. I mean, we didn't have, you know, we always have supplies and protective equipment. And when it comes to the PPEs, the personal protective equipment, we didn't have enough. So that's one thing that's really been challenging us. And, you know, one of the things that we had a big discussion yesterday was every time we go to a call, are you masking up, Sheriff? Are you wearing gloves? Well, no, we're not. And I don't know any agency down here that is doing that throughout the state. I know sheriffs are pretty much on the same thought on that. We don't have enough equipment. No. So we did that we had 40,000 calls a year here in Cochise County. My deputies, you multiply that times almost 100 deputies. I mean, that goes really quick. And I had a call yesterday with Homeland Security saying, hey, if you got any extra, let us know. And I don't know if you saw that. China just sent Mexico 11 tons of medical supply to their country, PPEs.
Wow.
And 11 tons. I'm thinking, hey, how about us? How about us? And so it's just a side note on that. But so, yeah, we're hanging in there. We're doing what we think is right to protect ourselves so we can protect the citizens. So far, so good.
What do you anticipate the changes to be moving forward in preparing for something like this should it happen again?
Well, it would be a shame on all of us as community leaders, government leaders, that if we don't debrief this, reevaluate this, and put a better plan in place. Because this might not happen for 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, or tomorrow. We just don't know. But we got to do a better job preparing. I think we all would agree. I don't think anybody can stand up and say, yeah, I was waiting for this. I was all ready. I don't hear anybody saying that. Now, being on the border, I'll say this much. Mexico is kind of an unknown to us when it comes to this epidemic. So one thing I'm concerned about is if the governor brings us back into some kind of
normalcy.
Opening the state back up. we'll open the state back up. Well, Mexico, if their epidemic starts peaking as ours starts coming to an end, that's going to force those patients into the U.S. Like I just told you, Sherry, we are just came off of where our hospitals are pretty stretched. They're pretty stressed. And you know, we had the tents sent around our hospitals. This is good hospitals here. We got 3 or 4 hospitals in Cochise County. They do a very good job. But once again, that was a big challenge to them, and it still is as we speak. But now to have an epidemic hit Mexico and they start coming across the border, that is a huge challenge for us as we're, I mean, if we can't take care of our own, how are we going to take care of another country? So we just had a discussion on that yesterday.
Yeah, I was wondering about that one. You know, Trump was offering to help Korea, North Korea, and some other places. I was like, you can't even handle your own country. Why are you trying to offer help to somebody else?
You know, as Americans, we've always wanted to extend that hand throughout the world. But right now, this is an epidemic, a pandemic here at home that we need to take care of our own. And if we can't protect our health people, our public service responders, we're in trouble. We're in serious trouble. And that's been a loud message that I carried to D.C. yesterday with a conference call with our assistant secretary and some other folks that, listen, we got to do a better job getting that out to the rural areas.
Yeah.
And you always see about New York. And I my hearts go out to people in New York in these large areas. Think about that. If you New York, a square mile, they got like 27,000 people. In Cochise County, we have about 300 every square mile. So you can see the social distancing challenge in New York compared to what we do in the rural counties. So,
oh, absolutely. Has the virus impeded any of the illegals coming across? Not necessarily the border crossing, but through the illegal entries?
You know, we haven't heard that. Since we have, this is, it's called Title 42, which means that now that we have this health epidemic, this nation's challenge here with this virus, that has secured our border. And it's ironic you lead me down that way, because that's the border is the most secure that's ever been. I'll just say that. In my 36 years, right now, if you come across the border, you're going right back.
Yeah.
If you commit a crime, you're being detained. There is no longer, well, let's talk about it. So, yeah, it's very, very secure right now. Now, I will say this, too. Just though the cartel they're still pushing stuff through. They're still doing the human smuggling. They won't stop. They have no respect for this virus or the people who live in this country. So they're going to continue doing what they're doing. But overall, the border's a lot better under this Title 42 health epidemic.
Well, that's kind of comforting.
It is. There's some positive here. But I got to throw this thought up, and I've talked to this on your show and others, is the fact that everybody's agreed, let's secure these borders right now. We got this health epidemic. We got to keep everybody safe. That same message, that same ideology needs to follow suit for crime, too. It truly does. You can't just do it for a health epidemic. We need to do it for a crime epidemic, and that's what I'm talking about, the drugs and all that to come through.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, even more so. So.
Yes, you look at the drug epidemic in our schools, our communities, and the heroin overdoses throughout this country. That's a health epidemic, too.
Yeah, and people don't want to talk about it because they don't want to acknowledge it. It's like sex trafficking. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to believe it's happening here in America.
So. 100% correct on that. And for some reason, we've separated the two. And part of my thoughts on that is, politics. You got to keep politics out of public safety. You do it. We've kept it out of public health. Let's keep it out of public safety.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Cochise County Sheriff Mark Danels. And I was wondering, I know we've got a lot of scams going on up here regarding the COVID-19. Have you had any reports down there about people being scammed, and if so, what are they?
We have. Unfortunately, here you're in a health epidemic where, you know, 37,000 people have died, and then you got people trying to profit off of that. And that's just ill. That's ill in all aspects. And we have had that, you know, especially when it comes to the stimulus checks that came out here last week, where people are setting up fake sites, sending them out to people. Click on this link so you can get your check. Avoid all that. The IRS does not send those kind of links out to you. No way. You have questions, call the IRS. But so we are having that. And of course, when this first started, if you remember, Sherry, they the ration of supplies, toilet paper, for example, paper products and Tylenol, and people were buying that stuff, and then they're turning around selling it like four or five times the rate. And that's, that falls into a scam that does more of a, just an ill act by, there's no humanity. And I've said this, this whole health epidemic is a challenge of will and a challenge of humanity. And we can do better than that as Americans.
Yeah, I've seen some people. In fact, the Costco on Grant Road had, there had to be, this is the first weekend when everything happened, there had to be 2,000 or 3,000 people just in line trying to get into Costco. Then they spread out all over Grant Road. The police had to be called. Costco had to put some type of a system in place to keep their people safe and to, you know, keep the people off Grant Road.
Well, you look at the Walmart throughout Arizona. I think they're doing it in Tucson. I know they're doing it in Phoenix. I know they're doing it in Cochise County with my deputies, where we're actually working our local Walmarts. So just to keep people feeling good when they walk into Walmart, because there were a lot of issues at Walmarts where people were pushing, shoving, getting into fights. And, I mean, that's just not the way to behave. It's just not the way to behave. And so we're there and stationed. And I think that's throughout the country. That's a Walmart policy.
Yeah, they're bad people everywhere, but you know what? It also brings out the good in people when we have a situation like this. And it's unfortunate, like, a few of the bad people have to get all the publicity and the good people aren't getting any kudos at all.
Well, you make a very valid point on that, Sherry. I truly believe that, and I'll speak to my community down here, is we've actually come together in such a positive way. And sure, you have issues with crime still going on. You have the, you know, all calls up 300%, which has increased some of our response calls when it comes to, we have stabbing and calls like that, and violent calls. But the reality is, when you look at how we've come together, how we've taken care of a lot of our local businesses to make sure that they don't go under, things like that. Salvation Army, my wife, and who works at college here, she went over and they handed out 400 meals. I mean, things like that. That's what it's all about. It really is that we need to take care and pay that forward. And at the end of it, we're all going to embrace each other. I look at it as a positive thing.
Absolutely. And everybody should be checking on their neighbors, whether they know them or not. You know, introduce yourself. Hi, I'm your neighbor. Because,
yeah,
you know,
no,
you never
time.
Know. Somebody could be sitting there and need help, need something, and you could be the answer to their problem.
Right. And I think there's no better time than now. And we got a lot of idle time. And this is now in the criminal justice aspect of it. Idle time, idle mind is not usually good in our world, especially after it's endured for a while. And then you throw alcohol into that, and that's not good. But overall, I think it's an awesome time to, when you go for a walk. And I mean, we can still do our social distancing. I call it social separation. We still can do that and still say hi to a neighbor or to a friend. So I think it's very positive. Opportunities.
Are you preparing for an election?
Yes, I am. Actually, I'll be on the ballot here in November. So it'll be my third term. And this is my 36th year I'm in. But I'm going into my third term as sheriff.
Are you running on a post?
So far. I'm knocking on my head again as I would, so don't jinx that. Nobody's ran against me yet, and I haven't heard of anything. But
well, they know
again,
it's a hard job. Not everybody wants to do it.
Well, it is a hard job. It's a balanced job. You've got to be balanced at it. You've got to be strong on your values, and you got to be able to stick to your values and take some risks and make some decisions sometimes that not everybody's going to agree with. But how you place those words out there and how you apply yourself to your public is so important, because if you don't have that trust, you're in trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have a slogan for your campaign?
I don't. I don't. You know, and this goes not just for me, but pretty much any sheriff or some elected officials. And I run about 10 different events a week, speaking engagements, media events, whatever, presentations, whatever it may be. And when this kicked off, especially when the Governor Ducey put the executive order out there, it just shut my schedule down. It just shut. This is a new abnorm of the virtual and the phones and all this outreaching like this. But it's truly shut my schedule down. I took an opportunity to go out and spend more time in the field and support the men and women that are out there every day and stopping by our jails and just getting back engaged. Some things I usually don't have time to do. And so it's worked out very well. But it does. It's a different
whole different atmosphere
than what I'm used to.
We had several events scheduled, fundraiser events scheduled for Law Matters, and everything got shut down.
We do a Cards for Kids and we raise a lot of money, and I coordinate that event for the Boys and Girls Club down here. We shut that down, and just on and on. We had Minute Cook, which is a charity event for our symphony down here. Just the many different events that just were postponed or canceled completely. But things happen. If we can't deal with the unexpected, we're in trouble in this country. I mean, Americans have always done that very well. I continue to say, well, there'll be an end to this, and there'll be lessons at the end. But if we don't heed to the lessons, that's when we're going to be in trouble.
Oh, yeah. We always have to have a plan B and C and D. be prepared.
Sometimes E and F.
Exactly. Exactly.
But one thing about, I got to say this, one thing about COVID-19 that when it comes to the political world, it's buried politics. It's truly buried politics. You go back and look before COVID hit our country, and every night was some on every media was talking about politics. Whether presidential, congressional, whatever, local. Since this happened, it's buried politics. Nobody's talking about it. You might get a 30-second-minute blurb here on the national news, but overall, people aren't thinking politics right now, which I don't have a problem with. I really don't, because we should be taking care of each other and not worrying about the politics. Not that that's not important. It's very important in our communities and our country, but right now it's buried.
Do they have mail-in ballots down there?
We do. In fact, there's a big discussion, especially with this epidemic, to make it all mail-in. Yeah. In some states, Oregon has that. And I personally don't have a problem with that. I think it's not a bad way to go. But some people like the old traditional way to make sure they go in there and punch their ballots. So it's a big discussion right now here in our county.
No, I think I love the mail-in ballots. I vote early. You know, vote early, vote often.
And so do I. I agree. Yeah, there you go. There's a few cities that go by that philosophy. But, just kidding.
I came from one.
But bottom line is this. Bottom line is I like the mail-in, too, and that's how I do it. I just think it's painless, it's easy, it's convenient, and you're still voting. So I think voting is so important.
Yeah, because then when they start counting at the end of the night and they start telling you who they think won, you know your ballot's already been counted.
Yes, and a majority. I think a lot of counties and jurisdictions throughout this country are going to that, and it's nice. It's truly nice because they start, I think it's 2 or 3 days before, start counting the early ballots and get that in there. And a lot of times that's the predictor even for the final ballots are counted. Not always, but in most cases it is.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a TV show I was watching several weeks back. I was watching 2020, and Friday night, that's typically my routine. And all of a sudden, you appeared on 2020. I started texting you going, hey, you're on TV.
Correct.
Let's talk about that case, because I got the impression that, you know, they were just really bad-mouthing law enforcement and science. And, you know, I just like, let's hear what happened with that case.
Well, let me go back. I'll give a little history to your listeners. 2000, I think it was, right in there. In the Pacific Northwest, and when I retired in 2008, I went to this town, became police chief. Long story short is, but 10 years before I got there, approximately 10 years before I got there, they had a murder in that town of a 15-year-old girl. She was killed. The case, I'll just be blunt, was not handled properly. The police chief still has jurisdiction, but they work in a regional crime team up there. But based on many reasons, it never was collaborated or collective efforts were put together for this case. Unfortunately, the victim was victimized again in my mind, but number two, worse, was the fact that the suspect was still free. Well, when I got to town, that was the hot potato. You know, chief, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Unbeknownst to anything about the case, we spent 6 months putting the case back together. It was a mess. Like I said, we put it back together, recollected all the evidence, reorganized and put a fresh set of eyes on it. I went to every chief in the South Coast to include the sheriff and the district attorney, said, let's do this again. And everybody, we had brand new detectives on it, and we put that together. We spent a year, this is after about 6 months to 8 months, even put it back together, sought experts, you name it. We brought the new team in there, got them in place. We kicked it off with a press conference. put this case together. There was 903 investigative leads on this case. And it was incredible amount of work. Every day we worked this case from going in-state interviews, out-of-state. We just can't imagine the magnitude of effort. Two or three briefs a day with law enforcement that was working this. At the end, we felt comfortable. We had our suspect. We were, in fact, let me just rephrase that. We were confident we had our suspect. We took it with the DA. We took it to grand jury. This was a circumstantially based case. We didn't have physical evidence based on some of the issues I just talked about. This was based on circumstantial as a cold case. But with cold cases, these were teenagers that were involved. We were taking the benefit that now that they were parents and had kids of their own, they might see this a little different. Long story short is, I think the DA called in a boatload of people from the grand jury, people that were involved 10 years ago. And we got an indictment. We got an indictment on the boyfriend. He was arrested. They went to trial, similar to the grand jury. He called, I can't remember how many people, but it was an amazing number of people he called to the grand jury or to the trial. They convicted him of manslaughter one. Oregon's got either murder one or a man one, they call it. So he was convicted. Mandatory sentence was 10 years minimum. He got a 10-year sentence. And we worked with the Oregon State Police. They were assigned to our task force all the way through. The Innocence Project out of Oregon picked this case up. And he had spent a little over 9 years right in that area in state prison. What they found was that on one of the victim's shoes, two of her shoes were found. On the victim's shoe, there was a minute trace of male DNA. They couldn't even test it. It was so small. That was never disclosed to prosecution, defense, or law enforcement. Never disclosed. Now, I'll say this, Sherry, to you, is you and I go through Walmart and bump into people, step on the ground. You're going to get all kinds of DNA. There's no secret to that. But the Oregon High Court felt that that should have been disclosed by the Oregon State Crime Lab. I wish it would have been. I truly wish it would have been because I don't think it had made a bit of difference. Not a bit of difference. Well, so we had a choice to make. The Oregon High Court sent this, said, listen, we're not saying he's innocent. What we're saying is that this should have been disclosed. We think you need to either retry it or dismiss it. Well, based on the victim, the 15-year-old victim's family, they did not want to go through another trial.
Yeah, that's rough.
He served the majority of his time. So what justice is there besides the fact that we convict him again? Well, so we dismissed. As a result of that, ABT 2020 contacted me, contacted the DA, and said, we want to talk to you about this case. We talked to him. We did about 4 to 6 hours worth of taping with 2020. I went through the case. I went through why the important high points of the case. The DA did it even deeper. That DA was involved in this case since day one, so he knew the case even more than I did. We went through it. As you saw on that show, we got very little coverage. About 90% of that show was this poor guy, this poor innocent man. I mean, went through the whole thing. Listen, I respect our criminal justice system, but as I sit here and talk to you today, and I tell him straight up he's in front of me, there's no doubt who did that, and that was the one who was convicted. And based on a technicality, I mean, and based on what's best for justice, the victim, which is who we served for, this case wasn't retried. But they painted the picture of a totally different emotional person that's been victimized. And that was upsetting. I'll just tell you right now, very upsetting.
Yeah, I was a little upset at the end of the show, too. It just seemed like they slanted it to sensationalize something that really didn't happen. I know science back then it wasn't like it is today. We didn't have some of the technology we have today, and they couldn't do some things that, you know, these people were going, well, they should have done this. Well, it wasn't available. How could they do it?
Well, yeah, in the way they painted it as this good person, and what they failed to do, and this is so upsetting, and I have not talked to 2020 since this is aired, and what they didn't do is highlight the victim. Most important. In fact, the producer of the previous show even talked to me and was very upset about this. He actually spent a year and a half to 2 years with us every day as we put this investigation back together. he was so impressed because there was a previous show, and then they came back and did this show. But it was almost to the thought that let's cover our butts now. There's nothing to cover. I mean, this wasn't something that was malicious. There's no intent. What you don't know, literally, is what you don't know. We did not know that was there. But either way, even the high court said, we're not saying he's innocent, but this should have been disclosed. And that was the fault of the Oregon State Crime Lab. But as you saw on the show, they're like, this is nothing. There's nothing that we can even test. It's so minute. And going back to it is, I mean, this is a 15-year-old girl. Who knows who she ran into, talked to, where those shoes were? I mean, who knows? Who knows? So, yeah. But again, I respect the criminal justice system, but I was very, very disappointed the way they portrayed that. And they did not highlight the true facts of that case that got him convicted, both by myself or the DA. And so you see that. Of course, you're going to flare up your emotions. Oh, the criminal justice system messed with them. We had 15 to 20 law enforcement officers working that case from different agencies. Now, if there was something really wrong, and these were talented veteran law enforcement investigators, somebody would have raised a flag. Not one person raised a flag. In fact, we walked away very confident, even with experts, and obviously a grand jury and a jury of his peers felt the same way.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable that, you know, this man is assumed now that he's innocent and was, you know, in there under false pretenses. And I'm just wondering, if he was so innocent, is he out there looking for the real killer like OJ is?
Well, let me just say this. If he truly wanted to help us find who did it, he never cooperated with the first investigation, except he did a 19-minute interview at the onset. He did take a lie detector test at the onset by the Oregon State Crime or Oregon State Police. Besides that, he walked away, and he's never talked to law enforcement since. I offered up to work with him because his parents had talked to me. I offered up, and they would not work with me to include. Once I opened this up, and both parents have asked me, hey, will you open this up and find the real killer? Well, we'll find the killer. I mean, I don't know what you mean by that. But bottom line is this. We actually did open up that case, and I went and told them, hey, we're going to open up the case as you've asked me to do too, as one of the people in this community. And I'll just share this with you. They actually had told me when they had talked to me that they had a document saying who killed the 15-year-old girl. And they said, if our son's ever arrested, this is going to be his defense. They said, well, share that with me now. If you truly want to find justice, share it with me. They would not share that with me. So when I went out the day to tell them, hey, tomorrow we're going to do a press conference, we're going to open this up, my lieutenant was with me, they actually threw me off their property.
Oh, wow.
No discussion, but threw me off their property with some vulgar words, said, get off. We came back with a search warrant with the knowledge that they had information of who killed that girl. That turned to be unfounded information. We found the document, but it was truly unfounded, theorized conspiracy-type thoughts. Nothing of fact. Nothing of fact.
Can't they get in trouble for doing that?
Well, no. You can say you got information that you prove who did it, but truly, think about this. If you know who killed somebody, why would you not bring that forward? Why would you not want to work with law enforcement? And why would you not? I mean, this is obviously, he was a key suspect for a long time in the Rumorville and perceived world of that community. The difference between us is we put it into a collective case based around facts that were dominoed, which had proved that he did do it. And that's why the jury convicted him. Yeah, man, we got to give our juries credit here. We truly got to give our juries credit. I mean, they listened to a lot of people testify. I didn't even testify in the jury or the grand jury in this thing. And because the people that testified were people that had direct information with Nick, who was our suspect, or the case itself with Leah. And that's who testified. And I thought the DA did a very good job on this. I mean, and we worked together on that. And it's very upsetting because they painted a picture and they glorified who somebody, I'm confident, did a murder and killed a 15-year-old girl. And second of all to that is, even sadder, is they forgot the victim. They truly forgot the victim and the family.
Yeah. I was thinking that when I was watching the show. It's like, you're not hearing very much about this young lady or the family. And I wonder how they're feeling sitting there watching this.
Well, Yeah, I can only imagine. And I talked to the family when the High Court in Oregon came down with this decision. And then, though disappointed, upset, the bottom line is they're also realistic too. You know, hey, things happen. But now to see a national media come out and say, oh, this is sad. Look at what you've done to him. No, folks, no. This is the criminal justice system at work, and it was not malicious like you try to paint. But very disappointed. Just down to it. I don't watch the show no more.
Okay.
I've lost credibility with it. I truly have, because, wow.
Well, that's true. When you have somebody who's misrepresenting, continuously misrepresenting and slanting something like that, they do lose credibility. It's like, why should I watch you? I don't believe a word you're saying.
They highlighted a theme. They had a theme in mind. They highlighted it. We spent, like I said, 4 to 6 hours between the DA and myself. That was irrelevant to where they wanted to go. And to me, that's unprofessional. Just tell me what you want, and we won't waste our time. So
exactly.
It was very disappointing to see that. And because if some of the key points would have come out, people would have gone, wow, that's amazing. And I'll be honest with you. I had, comments throughout the country, from Canada. You know, why'd you do this to him? Really? Now, small. Now, this is a million audience watching this on a Friday night. And then maybe four or five comments. But the reality is some people still sparked into that level. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
So they believe what they see. They believe what they saw.
It's unfortunate. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels. And I was just wondering, do you have a cold case team down there to handle cold cases in Cochise County?
We do. In fact, what we've done, we got a couple retired deputies, detectives. They were in a leadership role. They have come back and they look at cases to include. We have a volunteer corps. We have 100 volunteers that serve our mission in different aspects, but we have a small group that's what they do. They review it. They put fresh eyes. And these are people that have lived a life, whether they're a colonel in the military, a doctor, whoever, that maybe don't have the law enforcement direct background, but what they have is a lot of life experience. They can bring a fresh eyes to a case. And that's what you want in any cold case. So
yeah, new
they
perspective.
Actually have done that. What's that?
New perspective.
Yes, exactly, Sherry. And we've done that. In fact, we got one that they're working on that I think is going to come to a very good close here. It's probably a 30-year-old case, 40-year-old case, where it involved a law enforcement officer. So, again, they do very good work. They do it free of charge, but they're still paying it forward from what they've learned over the years and to help others and bring some justice to these families. I mean, losing a loved one, especially at the hands of violence, I mean, there ain't no better to say, hey, we're going to bring some justice to you. That's about all you can give them back. It truly is.
It is. Now, you were in law enforcement up in the Northwest area. How long were you up there?
Just shy of 3 years. I retired in 2008 as a deputy commander and over the patrol section here at the sheriff's office. I stayed as a reserve. I came back every 3 months and still worked here to keep my tenure going in Arizona. But then I went up with a police chief up there, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was a city that had a lot of challenges, a lot of mistrust in the community, a lot because of this case, believe it or not, and that we just talked about. But we put that all back together. It was hard to leave to come back here. I came back to run for sheriff. It was my goal. I finished my degree up there, my master's, and then came back here to run for sheriff. So it was a hard thing to leave up there.
Well, you have better looking uniforms down in Cochise County than they had up there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So it's amazing what a short, kind of getting on a personal note, how young I was, and that was such a short time ago, and where I'm at today is like, wow, I'm aging quickly in this job. So yeah, I'm laughing on that. So, but yes, it was a good experience. I'll just say.
Are all the sheriffs going to campaign together in any way, or is it every man for themselves?
Usually, unless they ask, usually they just pretty much we work in respective. And now the border sheriffs are kind of unique. We have a bond from Yuma, Santa Cruz, and Pima, and Cochise. We work very close together because we deal with a shared challenge being on the border. So I know Sheriff Estrada from Santa Cruz is not running, and I wish him well, wish him the best. spent like almost 60 years in law enforcement. So,
can you imagine? I love the man. I think he's awesome.
He's a good man, and he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. So I wish him well, and him I talked a couple months ago, and he made his final decision. But so we'll have a new sheriff down there. But Sheriff Napier is running in Pima, and Sheriff Wilmot's running in Yuma. So, and we do, like I said, we do a lot together when it comes, whether it's back in D.C., doing media. We travel the country, giving presentations on border. And so we're pretty close. So if Sheriff Napier or Sheriff Wilmot said, hey, I need your help, we'd be there for each other. I'll just say that.
I know Sheriff Lamb has a campaign motto. It's God, Guns, and Freedom. That's what he's running on.
That's right up his alley. That's right up his alley. And I think the only two sheriffs in the state that don't have an opponent, last I've heard, is Coconino, Sheriff Driscoll, who's been in law enforcement like 45 years. He's a sheriff up there, and myself. I think everybody else has an opponent. So it's, and last election, there was 7 new sheriffs take office. So that might be sparking why there's so many contested races this time. I'm not sure, but yeah, there's a lot of races.
Dan, I find it amazing that some of the people who think they're qualified for that job, because it isn't a job you just step into. You really need years and years and years of experience in management in order to be an effective sheriff.
Well, I'm a big believer in education. I truly am. Not that that makes the person or makes the leader, but it sure adds to the credibility of that leader. Second, I'd say this is, you know, sheriff's offices are a little unique than a police chief, and I've been both. I started my career in police department back in 1984.
Which department?
2 years, like, Bisbee Police Department.
Oh, okay.
Got out of the military, and then they picked me up and sent me to the academy. So I hold my career, very grateful for them. But long story short is, sheriff's offices are unique. We have jails. Most police officers and police departments don't deal with jails.
Yeah.
So when you grow up through a sheriff's office, it's got its own unique culture. We work directly for the people. There is no layers between a sheriff, anybody. My bosses are 131,000 people who live in Cochise County. That's truly all my bosses. I've had so many bosses in my life, and in each respective county. And it's easy to get hold of a sheriff. Most sheriffs will obtain the most votes in every county because they're usually the face of that county because they're out there so much, and they're just dealing with the people throughout the county every day. So it's a unique position. Not everybody can do it. I'll just say that. I mean, come up, boy, I was this person. I worked for this agency. That doesn't mean you can be a good sheriff. It truly is. And I got to say, I give credit to our voters. They seem to get it right. They truly seem to get it right in most cases.
Yeah, it's a tough job. And hopefully, I know Sheriff Napier, he's been on the show a lot. And he does a fantastic job. And I think when he took office, he was handed this, I called it a bag of worms. He called it a bag of something else. And he's really turned it around. So,
well, he has. And I agree with you, Sherry, on that. And I'll tell you, I've worked with him. He's a very, very smart man. He's very diplomatic. He's very balanced. I mean, he's fought the Pima County supervisors, which has been eyes on by all sheriffs, not just here in Arizona, but beyond, when it comes to Stone Garden, which is a public safety-driven program.
Yeah.
And to be shut that down and hand for him to continue dealing with that. I mean, I give him credit. I think he's really done a very good job on that. And just the way he handles himself, I mean, he's part of the National Major Sheriffs Association. He just does a very, very good job, and he's a very good partner for me in Cochise County. Him and I get together. I just talked to him yesterday. We get together, and we'll have lunch, and he gets frustrated about something, or I get frustrated. We'll go have lunch, and just it's nice to have those release valves. It really is, because where else do you turn sometimes? You don't want to bring it to your family.
Exactly, so but you want to talk to somebody who understands what you're going through, and, you know, he understands. And he's the voice of reason. He'll take a topic and just make it, level it out. It's not, you know, extremist. He levels it out. And I wish more people would listen to him.
I do too. And like I say, he's got a lot of balance when he speaks. And that's really what you want. You want balance. But he's not afraid to step up and take that risk and make that risk statement or make that risk decision, which may not be popular, but he knows it's right. And
for the greater good.
Yes, for the people we serve. And he does an amazing job doing that. And I've learned a lot from him. And like you said, he's been around 36, 40 years, too. I mean, he's not young in the game.
So no, he's really old.
Yeah. Let me just put that on right. He's older than I am, I would say that. So, like I said, man, that's been fun. But yeah, he is. He's a very, very passionate and dedicated man about what he does. And so I wish him well up there.
Yeah, very cool. So what are your plans for the future down there in Cochise County? What are you going to do to prepare for our next emergency?
Well, when this is all over, you know, by the way, Cochise County is the only county in the state. The governor did the order last week saying that health departments can share information with public responders, first responders, law enforcement, fire, EMS. We're the only county that hasn't come to an agreement with our health department. So we had a big meeting yesterday. We're working on that. I'm hoping we can get down the road on that because we need to protect our first responders. So that's a discussion. When this is all over and done, we need to have a better idea how we go in the future when it comes to health epidemics. This is a first. I mean, I think first for many, many in this country to include our health providers. So we got to have a better plan there. We have emergency plans on active shooters. We have emergency plans on school safety, all the different things we do. We didn't have a plan on a health epidemic, I'll just be honest with you. So we need to do a better job on that. The other thing is our virtual system, which I've talked to in the past, we've deployed 800 cameras. Our camera systems, our network to secure the border. It's not on the border. It's within communities on drug smuggling trails has been very, very effective. We're one of the safest counties on the Southwest border right now, mainly because we've deployed so many cameras, our virtual system, and the cartels. When you have 100% conviction rate, we get you. They're going around Cochise County. So we've taken our program, working with the three sheriffs, Sheriff Napier, Sheriff Estrada, and Sheriff Wilmot, all the way to Yuma now. So we're already to the California line. The New Mexico's governor just approved it as a crime-fighting tool in her state. So we're now taking the system all the way to Texas. So we want to, in the next 4 years, is obviously get that program turned over to those respective sheriffs and those agencies and let them start running their own systems. Right now we're running a system right out of Cochise County all the way to California and Texas. That's a big challenge that we need to help foster to those respective agencies. But so we've done a good job working in a collective effort with Border Patrol, our governor, local law enforcement, Highway Patrol. We work very well together, and the results are showing. As the ranchers and folks say in this county, the best it's been in 30 years is now. So something is working. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. We know that. But it's working better than it ever has.
How are the ranchers doing? I miss our ranchers.
They're doing very well, very well. You know, ranchers are, let me tell you, I got so much respect for them. What they and you hear the stories about different things about the land. They're the best stewards of our land because that's what promotes their quality of life. So why would they abuse their land? And that's something, I did grow up in a ranching community. So working with the ranchers over the last three decades, now sheriff, let me tell you, I had the utmost respect for them when it comes to their core values and who they are and what they believe when it comes to as Americans. And I do so much for them. I have so much admiration for them. So I continue to support them any way I can. And they know that. So 2 a.m, they have a problem, they call me, and I go. So it's just things are happy right now. Things are in good place with our system and how we've promoted our prosecutions, and the cartel doesn't want to come through our county right now. They really, really don't. What we're seeing now is some human smuggling, but when it comes to drugs, it's at an all-time low in 30 years, all-time low.
That's awesome. I know you were the first person to give the ranchers, give these people on the border radios so that when something happened, they would have a radio handy to talk directly to you. And I think that's a brilliant idea. All the states should do it.
Well, it's true. I mean, when you're out in our western states are huge. And I'll be honest with you, by the time I get to some of these ranches, I mean, it's a crime scene. It truly is. I mean, we're just going to collect the evidence and put the pieces back together. So they got the first line of defense is the rancher himself or herself. So we want to make sure that they have the ability to talk directly with us. And we gave them all, every rancher that was didn't have cell phone coverage or was in vulnerable areas of smuggling, we provided them radios so they had direct link right into my regional communications center. We did that with every school in Cochise County, not just the ones in the county. We have 21 schools in the county, and then every school in the city areas proper were also given radios. So, again, it just enhances that communication with public safety. We got a good thing going down here when it comes to all our law enforcement.
Yeah, you have great communication. Do you teach, when you give them the radios, do you teach them how to talk on the radio?
Or do they just plain language.
Just plain old language?
Plain old language. Get on that ranch, they're on a horseback, and they come across some smugglers or come across some armed people. All they got, we tell them, just keep on riding right away. Just ignore them, act like you don't see them, and then get on that radio and say, hey, this is this rancher. We know who they are. They're all plotted into a GPS system, and so we can find them. We can also get to them right away. So it works out really well.
That's brilliant. I love that. That has to be a sense of security for them, too.
It is. It's a peace of mind that they haven't had since the federal government's plan went into place. Because remember, we were the direct byproduct of a plan that put the smugglers right in our backyard. And as a result of that, we've had crime increase, we've had death, you name it. So to see the rebound on this has been, I think, very positive. And it's nice to see the ranchers that can go out and enjoy their land without having to worry so much, because they're the best they're the best report card on this. And they're saying, hey, we love it. It's working. And but I can tell you, I'll say, we look on our camera system every day, and they show me photos, and we see the smugglers going around Cochise County in New Mexico. We see them in west of us, too, and I notify those sheriffs, hey, here's what you got, because there's some bad people coming through there.
Yeah. She gets some bumper stickers that say, escape to Texas.
Exactly. We've talked about that, and, you know, we're hoping that this system will become infectious in a way that every law enforcement at the local, this is a local perspective, and how it's worked, how it's truly worked, and how we work with Border Patrol and how they're working back with us. It's enhanced that operation too. Monday, Sheriff Napier and I will be presenting to the President's Commission on Law Enforcement and Administration of Justice, and we're talking about this program, talking about the overall border issue, Sheriff Napier and I.
Do you still have the military down there?
We do. We do have the military down here, and they've been very beneficial. I mean, they're part of a norm down here for us, and they're building walls down here. They're still enhancing the wall. They're taking down the old 8-10-foot wall, putting up 30-foot wall. I know that's very controversial, but I'll tell you right now, working before the wall, pre-wall, and working post-wall, it makes a difference. It truly makes a difference. And I tell people all the time, whether you like it or not, it's a symbol of trespass. Whether you have a personal wall on your property or whether the nation has a law on its border, it's a symbol of trespass.
Yeah, it is. You said earlier that you have better communication with the health department, the hospitals down there. What did you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is Governor Ducey here this week actually sent out an order saying that the health departments in the respective counties can share. So if you have somebody that's quarantined, mm-hmm. or somebody that's been confirmed, to provide those addresses. I don't care about names. None of us cares about names. But provide that address to public safety responders. So if an ambulance is going there, if law enforcement is going there for a call, we know we're walking into a COVID quarantine scenario.
Which okay, that's,
protect ourselves.
That's brilliant.
Cochise
that's
County,
a good idea.
It's an awesome idea. It's a common sense idea. This is not just, you know, we're not in the business to figure out who's got what disease. Law enforcement, that's not what we care about. What we care about is that we can protect our own so we can protect you. And so Cochise County, as of yesterday, was the only county in the state that didn't have they weren't sharing information. So we had a big meeting yesterday. I think we're going to move down the road on that in a good way. I'm hoping we do, because it just makes sense. During an pandemic, it makes sense.
Yeah, it absolutely does. We only have a couple of minutes left. I want to thank you for being on the phone. I want you to come up here so I can see you and talk to you. This is really weird.
I was disappointed. I couldn't get up. I was all ready to drive up this morning, and I hadn't seen you in a while. And then, of course, we got this going on, so it's totally understandable. But I'll be back on soon. I look forward to seeing you come up and You do good work when it comes to the supporting the nonprofits and law enforcement. So shout out by all law enforcement. Thank you, Sherry.
I appreciate that. And next week, we're going to have the director of the Register of Contractors, the Arizona Register of Contractors. We're going to find out what handymen are allowed to do and not do, and what happens if you do file a complaint. We're going to have the prosecutor on as well, the Pima County prosecutor, and she'll walk us through it. And then the following week, we have Sheriff Mark Lamb coming on, and guns a-blazing. It's going to be a fun show. I want you to stay safe. Please stay safe out there. Thank you for your service. And I want everybody in listening to shop local, stay safe, stay healthy, stay home.